that between November 3rd and Inauguration Day at the end of January, we're going to see Bush v. Gore on steroids. And remember, the five Republican justices stole that election, the 2000 yeah. election, from the American people. And basically,
we're at a time, Francis. I have nightmares about that vote. We're at a time. That's Francis Boyle. I'm Dennis Bernstein. We hope you come back. That's it.
Guess what? It's fall, so that means it's time for KBOO's annual membership meeting. Join us Saturday, November 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. via Zoom to hear updates about the station, meet candidates running for four open board seats, and participate in a lively discussion about KBOO in the year 2020 and beyond. Featuring performing artists Scooter Rogers, Rain Ezra, and host Trista Tyree. To get the link for the meeting, register online by visiting our website kboo.fm/meeting2020. That's kboo.fm/meeting2020.
Our TikTok Bus Stop is a serial 30-minute podcast produced by a group of students and educators based out of Reynolds High School in Troutdale, Oregon. The students are enrolled in the Reynolds Gallery of Contemporary Art, or ROCA, where they learn professional arts management skills by organizing and producing gallery shows, fundraisers, and events under the mentorship of their teacher, Katie Sullivan. I'm Erica Thomas, their artist in residence for this school year, and I am the instigator of this project you're about to hear. Starting in fall of 2019, we began working on this project, Art Talk Bus Stop, named by the students who make it. Each month, we record an interview with an artist. Students learn to research and ask interesting questions, how to run the tech, produce and edit the show, and promote new episodes. You can follow updates on the Reynolds Gallery of Contemporary Art on Instagram at Reynolds Art Show. We hope you'll tune in on the last Wednesday of each month for our 30-minute interviews. For this month's episode, we thought we would share a compilation of our guests from the previous school year while we gather the students for the coming year and begin the process of inviting new artists and recording interviews. So we'll be back in November with a brand new episode with a new interview by the students and a guest artist. And for this month, we hope you'll enjoy this supercut of our 2019-2020 season.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop. I am Juan, a senior here at Reynolds High School.
I'm Esmeralda. I'm also a senior here at Reynolds High School.
And in the gallery, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Emily.
And we are joined here today by our lovely guest, Leaf J. Lee.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me.
So actually, I was on your Instagram because I kind of wanted to get to know more about you and kind of like what kind of person you are. And you have a Patreon, yeah?
Yes, I do.
So you have like certain tiers and stuff, and I believe you did stuff with astrology. You made these videos.
Oh, that's right. I did make those videos.
I watched them and I was like, this is, you know, I love this. This is great. Can you like kind of give more about that?
Yeah. So the videos, I had an idea when I first was getting started with Patreon, when I first kind of like, I left my day job as a barista to do this full time. And I was pretty anxious. So I was thinking like, I have to be doing so many things. And I really was like, I'm going to do a video for every sign. And I'm going to create these designs for Psychic Sister. And I'm going to do all these different things. And the videos were really fun because I didn't really know what I was doing. I was very experimental with it, which is something I really, really enjoy about art making is experimenting. So I experimented with creating the soundtrack, and I just did that in GarageBand on my computer, and I never really used GarageBand, and so I just like really played with trying to find how to use the application and how to play with different beats and things like that, and learn about how to create a loop. And so I would kind of spend some time working on the soundtrack. And then I also would take different video clips of myself, depending on the sign and depending on the weather and the location that I was at. Like, I would go and just sort of like set up my phone somewhere. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a tripod at the time, so sometimes it was like a cinder block in my backyard. I just sort of prop it up and then try to see if I could get a good enough angle, and then just kind of like moving around.
Yeah,
and
I noticed that.
Yeah, and I just great, kind yeah. of like dance and have uh-huh. fun and try to keep it really, really light mm-hmm. and not too serious, because if I get too serious, I won't.
You're gonna get attacked. I just like certain signs.
Yeah.
And be like,
yeah. Yeah. So
speaking about social media, I was flipping through yours as well, and I saw you went to Japan.
I did.
Yeah. How was that for you?
Oh my gosh, it was so mind blowing. Cause I've always wanted to go to Japan, and when I was younger, I just remember people saying like, "What do you think would be like the most culture shock, scary place to go?" And I was like, "Tokyo. It just looks terrifying. Like, it's so big and such a huge city, and I feel like I would just get swallowed up and get lost, and then I wouldn't know how to speak the language, and so I'd probably just like die in the street or something." And then so it's always been a dream of mine to go, and when I got to go, I was amazed, because I've also been really afraid of flying. So I had to do a lot of things to kind of get ready to face my fear of just the flying and being there. But once I got there, it was so wonderful, because it was probably the most calming place I've ever been, which is very interesting, because there's so much, like so many people. It's like one of the largest cities in the world. But there's something really peaceful about the way everybody's kind of flowing through the public transit and walking down the street and restaurants and things like that. It was a hugely inspirational trip for me. I ended up doing like an entire collection of garments just based on the map that I got, that was like the transit map, because I was so interested in all the lines and all the colors, because there's so many different transits that are occurring at the same time. And when they handed me the map, it's all written in Japanese, and I was like, I don't know how to get from here to there at all. But when I started understanding how everything's color coded, that really helped me too, because I'm so interested in color, and so I ended up kind of creating this whole line work called the reroute line that I did in a lot of my clothing, etc. So it was a really good trip.
Hi, my name's Sarah Farahat. I'm based here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a transdisciplinary Egyptian American artist, activist, and educator.
Well, thank you for being here today. My first question for you is, growing up, when did you start noticing that art was something you really loved and kind of got into?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time outside as a kid, and I think when I wasn't outside, I was either with a nose in a book, or my mom had, you know, shoved a pencil in my hand or something, or some crayons. There wasn't really an aha moment as a young person. Later, I found out that my mother had always really wanted to take art classes, and they didn't really have the money for that when she was growing up. And so she ended up becoming a classical flautist, but had always kind of been interested in the arts, sort of the visual arts. And so, you know, I think I credit her a lot with that. I think it took me quite a while to decide that I wanted to pursue art professionally. I think I was in my mid-20s by the time that I was like, I want to go to art school. I want to kind of push this further than I have been.
So out of all the different types of art that you could have done, you chose to kind of lean towards this political kind of art. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I would argue that we're all political beings and bodies. And I think that based on our locations and our identities, really informs how we walk through the world. And so as as a human who grew up with a Muslim father and a Christian mother, as a woman, as someone who is mixed, who have all my Egyptian side of my family halfway across the world, my upbringing was inherently political. And so the same with art, there wasn't a moment, an aha moment for me in terms of like understanding the world through the context of like race, class, gender, sexuality, all of those things. I think that those are things that were sort of ingrained in me by my parents and by my experiences of the world and those of the people around me. So I think college definitely had something to do with becoming more politicized and feeling like I might have some agency or ability to affect change. I had a class called Slavery, Internment, and the Prison Industrial Complex that was taught to me by Professor Foreman when I was down in LA, and that was a class where we both read historical documents but also looked at pop culture and also looked at current and contemporary politics and kind of crafted plans to work through. Specifically in California, there was Prop 21, which was named the Juvenile Justice Initiative, but it really meant that it was creating situations in which younger and younger people were getting locked up. And so we kind of organized as a class around Prop 21. And so for me, that was a really pivotal moment in the way that I thought about activism and the ability to affect change and myself as sort of a possibility to be an agent of change.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop. I'm Nicole, and I'm joined here with...
I'm Manny, a sophomore at Reynolds.
I'm Katie Sullivan.
I'm Erica Thomas.
And we are joined here with a pretty unique guest, Ashley Stollmeyer.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you are pretty unique to this podcast. You're the first curator we've had on here. When putting a show together, do you ever kind of come in contact with sort of bad or good art? Do you think that exists?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I think there's definitely bad art, but what I would say about that is just because I choose not to include a particular artwork or a particular practice in something that I'm working on doesn't mean that that art is bad. It just means that it's not a perfect fit for the conversation that I'm hoping to have. As an artist, it can be really sort of tempting and scary to think that when you don't get picked for something, that means that the work that you're making is not very good. And that's not true. That's not true at all. It just means that you may have to wait a little bit longer for the opportunity that's going to best showcase what you've made. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
I know a lot of artists and a lot of people have different answers for this, but since you're around a lot of art, how would you define art?
Ooh, what a big question. I think for me, art is not even always visual, right? Because I think a lot of people would say music is art. I think a lot of people would say writing is art. So art is a bunch of different things, visual or otherwise. But I guess in the broadest possible terms, art is a way that people get creative in expressing or sharing their observations about the world around us.
And today we are joined with Patricia. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Patricia Vasquez. I go by Patty, usually. I like the short version of my name. And I'm an artist and educator living in what I say the unceded lands of the Clackamas, Chinook, and other indigenous peoples in what we know as Portland.
Moving towards your work, I believe you did a work with a group of people that worked at this museum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You sort of formed this relationship with them. Why do you think art and relationships with people play such a key role in creating something just beautiful and great?
I mean, in general terms, I believe that when you have enough time to spend on an art project, and that allows you to develop relationships, you're able to bring together, I always talk about this diversity of sensibilities, you know, that you're able to bring together a diversity of sensibilities that are reflected in the art, that are not only mine as an artist. And I am pretty excited always to see what kind of connections I can make to people, but I think that in order for those connections to be genuine, you need to spend some time developing relationships. And that's more like in general terms. Mm-hmm. And in like, personally, I enjoy the relationship building part because before I started doing art more seriously, I spent a few years working in the immigrant rights movement. I did a lot of organizing and education. And the organizations I was working with used popular education, which is something I have studied formally, and I have also practiced in the field. And a lot of what you do is just build relationships. That's something that just comes natural to me, and I enjoy it. And I've been able to transfer that into making art projects in a way that it works for me. It works for me really, really well, working in social situations. I hope that made sense.
So Kelly, what do you do as like your job, like work?
I run my own company as a building construction contractor. I do tile and finish carpentry primarily. And then as a non-paid job, I am one of a group of collective members who run a nonprofit, all volunteer run nonprofit called S1. My sort of trajectory of what I did in high school and how I arrived at being able to run a nonprofit and be involved in the arts would probably be cool to share with y'all.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did mostly theater and photography in high school. I also was always a dancer. I grew up dancing, and that was a really important part of my life. But I did not know in high school that you could get a degree in dance or that you could get paid to be a dancer. I did not know really that that there were that many options in the arts. And being someone who also loves science, I kind of had convinced myself that that was the path I was going to focus on, despite that I basically lived and breathed art forever. You know, actually doing theater set building was the first time I realized that I loved building. That was actually where I started to gain a lot of my construction skills, was through set design and building in high school. And then in college, I continued to study photography and dance on the side, but kind of realized that I was not super into doing theater tech. I had an opportunity to do that at a community college that I went to first, and I sort of realized that I maybe wanted to try a different trajectory and continue to focus on photography. And when I graduated from Evergreen State College up in Olympia, Washington, I was really eager to be involved in the arts. I was looking for something different, and I discovered a little nonprofit art center called the Portland Art Center that was focused on installation art. And I kind of decided that that was what I wanted to do, and I would figure out what jobs I would need to have in order to do that almost all the time. And in that environment, we were building walls and taking walls down and building structures for artists. And so I was working with artists who had a lot of different skill sets. And so through that job, I was like acquiring a lot more skills. I was also learning about nonprofit management and arts management. And I basically stayed in arts management for the next 5 years, moving from nonprofit to professional for-profit galleries, doing a lot of preparator work. So helping artists design their exhibition and install it. I worked with PNCA, the art school in town, and also OCAC, which is no longer there, with their student exhibitions, coordinating and curating. Just being around artists was like an incredible way for me to learn about my own art practice and it really felt like that was my master's. Like at one point I thought getting a master's in arts was something I was like really wanted to do and was really important. But I kind of quickly realized that I was getting a much better education by being surrounded by and working with artists all the time.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop. I'm Emily from ROCA, which is Reynolds Gallery of Contemporary Art, and I have my other students with me, which are...
Hi, I'm Sophia.
Hi, I'm Juan.
Hi, I'm Esmeralda.
And we have Erica, our producer.
Hi.
And then we have our guest, Renee Sills.
Hello.
What is SOLA School, and like, what does it mean, or what do you do?
SOLA School is the name of a program that I started and that's actually also ended. So it ran for about 5 years. It was the School of Living Arts. And this was a program that would train teachers to do adaptive and inclusive movements with people. And so we had a loose structure that followed a yoga teacher training program, but the stuff that we were teaching wasn't so much yoga like you might think about it, like certain poses. It was more the function of bodies and how your physiology worked when you were moving. And then we had a lot of practices that were focused on inclusive practices, and that means that we could meet people where they were, in what setting they were in, what clothes that they were wearing, and what their bodies needed. So we would train people to kind of understand anatomy and physiology and functional movement and injuries and different kinds of conditions that someone might experience in their body, like age or disability or pregnancy, but also things like race that could be a prohibiting factor in someone enjoying themselves or feeling comfortable in a yoga studio. So it would be important for a teacher or facilitator to understand like racialized trauma that someone might carry in their body as well. So SOLA School was a program that lasted for 5 years, and actually in 2018 it was our last year, and it has dissolved now, but it's still going because it still functions as a volunteer program. So some of our students have taken it over and are now running like a volunteer kind of outreach program, and they work with other movement trainings, yoga teacher trainings, Pilates trainings, dance trainings, stuff like that. And then they bring in a module on inclusive practices and adaptability. And then they place teachers in a variety of locations. So there are teachers at elementary schools, at high schools, at senior centers. We work with an outreach center for women and children who have left abusive domestic violence situations. We've worked with incarcerated people. So that program is still going on. And I advise with it now. I'm kind of like on a board of advisors and work with the students that have taken it over, but it's no longer my project.
What do you enjoy most about your work or like life?
I enjoy a lot of things about my work and my life. I really enjoy being my own boss and setting my own schedule and doing something that I find interesting and that I care about. I also think that astrology is really helpful. A lot of people have ideas about it that it's like a fortune-telling kind of thing, like, oh, you know, some witchy person is gonna tell you all about yourself. But I actually think that it is much more like a very sophisticated and nuanced personality assessment, kind of like Myers-Briggs or something like that. And that it really helps people accept themselves and understand what their natural talents and gifts are, as well as where they run into problems in their personality, because we all have problems in our personality, right? And sticking points and struggles. And astrology is just a really generous and kind language to think objectively about yourself and your tendencies. And so my experience working with people, reading their charts, is that it's a lot like therapy. Like, people will cry, they'll like have really important kind of emotional breakthroughs and be able to accept themselves and like see themselves, but also love themselves more and forgive themselves for things. And that feels really important to me. I care a lot about people, and I want to, you know, do good in the world, and it feels important that I spend time doing something that helps people. So that's also what I really love about my job and how I spend my time.
What's your favorite star sign?
Or like constellation? Oh, my favorite sign? Well, I don't know if I have a favorite sign because I think they're all really great, but I do have a favorite season. So astrology, you know, all the sun signs like Cancer, Virgo, Pisces, they're descriptions of seasons and light, the kind of light that we have. So I would say that my favorite season is like Taurus and Gemini season, like late spring getting into early summer, and that like when the earth is like exploding, you know, like everything is blooming and light is getting really cool and there are like baby animals everywhere is one of my favorite times of year.
Something about like OMSI, like, right? You have a piece like in OMSI or you did?
Yeah, I was the artist in resident at OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, for 2 years. And that was a position I made for myself. I don't know if they still have an artist in resident. I just kind of asked if I could be that person. They said yes. So I spent 2 years there, mostly hanging out in the museum and watching how people were interacting with the space and how they were learning. OMSI has like a really great program for experiential learning with science. And then I did a couple of different projects there, but the one that I worked on the most was called Movement in the Museum. And that project involved pairing science educators from OMSI with movement educators that I curated from the outside world. So I brought in dancers and yoga teachers and other kinds of movement artists. And we would have classes, and the first half an hour of the class, one of the science educators would be introducing some kind of topic. So like how light and sound waves work, or how weather patterns work, or we had one that we looked at bugs and their exoskeletons. And then a movement artist would respond to the science educator and teach a movement class to embody some of the principles that the science educator was teaching us about. So that was really fun. I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn a lot through my body, and it was really fun to play around with different scientific principles through movement.
Yeah.
When you look at your art pieces and when you're making them, what do you want the person that's looking at them to see and to feel?
Oh, such a good question. I want my work to be, let's say, open-ended enough that they can bring their own interpretation and experience to the piece. And so I don't want absolute control over what that is for them, but I do want it to be evocative. I want them to be maybe a little off balance and disoriented when they look at the work and say, like, you know, kind of like, this is exciting and visually stimulating and maybe a little confusing and paradoxical. And maybe they're like, they have questions about what it's meant to be, and they have a hunch, or maybe some multiple hunches or even conflicting hunches. And then they're sort of like, if they want to look at it for a while, that sustained viewing experience adds up to maybe a story or some overlapping stories for them.
And we are joined here today with Rio and Christian from Rutan. Hey.
Hello, what's up?
Hi, welcome. So first, can you guys tell us about who you guys are and what you guys do?
My name is Rio Collier, and I'm a multimedia digital video artist, and I have a background also in doing more like documentary video work, but also a lot of experimental video, which is what I've been focusing more on these days.
Well, for me, I've been traveling for a while from many different countries, and in each country I learned part of the culture and part of the instrumentation, where they play, and like traditions, and I learned for myself, even in the street, with people in the street, I find like percussionists, and I'm so curious, and I walk to them and I'm like, hey guys, what are you playing? And I'm like, oh, this thing. And they go, hey, you can teach me. And they teach me things, you know? They teach me, I met some people like playing the didgeridoo, and I'm like, oh, well, you can teach me that. And that's how I learned the instruments. but later on over here, the things like I make rap and hip hop when I'm more like teenager, like 16 to 18, I think so. And there's where I learned to use the computer and record my voice and put some effects, something more simple. But later on here, when I establish more here, I put more hands on the computer and I try to relearn for myself again, like how to use the software. And it took me well. Now I've been like 5-6 years working with the same software. Basically that I learned for myself on the street or with people, asking to people teach me what they are playing.
What was your biggest art accomplishment that you've had so far in your career?
Biggest accomplishment, you know, I think for me there's not a single accolade that really stands out, but every day that I work as an artist feels like the biggest accomplishment. You know, like just the feeling of getting out of bed and like all I have to do that day is go to the studio, and it's completely self-directed, and like it was many years of hard work to get to a place where that's what I get to do all day. And so it just feels totally awesome, and I never take it for granted. It's like really the best job in the world.
Before we go, I just wanted to say that we're Roca, the Reynolds Art Gallery of Contemporary Art, and we do cool things here like this podcast, and we hold art gallery shows. We like to have outside artists come in and work with us. So if you're interested in volunteering with us, and just check us out on art-roca.com. And you could check us out on our Instagram page, which is the Reynolds Art Show.
Oh, and thank you, Ryan, for coming.
Thanks for having me. Such a treat.